Really, really happy to be with all of you. It's really glorious and really amazing that you're all studying the Bhagavad Gita. Out of all the books that I've come across in my life, the Bhagavad Gita has been the most life-changing. It's been the book which has answered every doubt, every dilemma, every confusion. Is the book that I go back to for inspiration. It's the book that I share with people the most. And it's the book which 25 years after first reading it, I'm still studying and learning new things. So it really is an incredible source of wisdom and knowledge. And we're all blessed to be able to come together and study it together. So I am not giving a talk today, as I understand, but you're going to get saved from hearing one of my talks. But what we thought would be more interesting today is, rather than me giving a talk, we could just have questions and answers. Of course, all of you have been studying the Bhagavad Gita. I don't know, you're on chapter 3 now, is it 3 or 4? So you may have many questions. You may have many things you want to get clarified. So I'll try my best to try and share some of whatever I've learned with you and answer some of your questions. So I understand Rajiv is going to field the questions. If you have more questions as we speak, you can put them into the chat. If you feel like you don't want to put it on the public chat, you can private message it to Rajiv, who is appearing as Learning Gita 2021. So you just message it to him, and then he'll field the questions like that. And then let's see where we go today, and let's see what we can learn, and let's see how Krishna will inspire us all in our journey forward this evening. So Rajiv, over to you.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. So we were thinking to do a summary of chapter 5 and 6, but should we go to questions straight away? Or
was I supposed to do the summary?
Yeah.
I was supposed to do the summary. Oh, okay.
Okay, we can go to questions. It's up to you.
I can do a summary. You want me to do a summary off the top of my head? Like just really quick?
Yeah, if you can. Because we've been going through the acronym.
5 and 6, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, you've been going through the acronyms, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
So chapter 5 is a very amazing chapter. The first 6 chapters of the Gita are all dealing with karma yoga. The middle 6 chapters are dealing with bhakti yoga. And the final 6 chapters are dealing with jnana yoga. Sometimes to make it easier for people to understand, I say the first 6 chapters are about how to live. The middle 6 chapters are all about how to love. And the final 6 chapters are all about how to leave. How to leave the world with spiritual consciousness and become renounced and free from all attachments. So live, love, and leave. This is the goal of a human form of life. And so the first 6 chapters are really talking about living and how to live in this world. When we live in this world, we understand that there are many complexities which arise, isn't it? Like we're living in COVID times, and every time you do something, it has a reaction, and you know, all these things happen. It becomes very, very complex. So Krishna in the first 6 chapters is talking about how to practice karma yoga. Karma means action and yoga means connection. So when you make all of your activities spiritually connected, then what happens is those activities don't generate reactions which will entangle you in a web of complexity. Spiritual actions. That's the goal of the Bhagavad Gita. So chapter number 5 is entitled Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. The acronym is STEP, because you can't stand still in the world. You have to do something. isn't it? Like when there's a naughty child, you can't just tell the child, like, okay, sit down in the corner and don't do anything for the next 3 hours. It will never work. What you have to do is you have to tell the child or give the child some better engagement. So the acronym is STEP, because we have to step in this world. We have to move. We have to act. We have to be dynamic. But how do we act and move in this world in such a way that we don't create more karma and complexity for ourselves? That is what is explained in this chapter. S stands for stay in the world, because the first thing Krishna again highlights to Arjuna is don't try and leave the world. Don't try and run away. Don't think that if you go to the forest, all your problems will be solved. No, no, you have to stay in the world. T stands for Tyaga, which means renunciation. And what Krishna does is he explains to Arjuna what is a higher type of renunciation. Renunciation doesn't mean to have a shaved head. Renunciation doesn't mean to wear saffron robes. You see, Lee's got a shaved head. He's a renunciate. It doesn't mean to have a shaved head. It doesn't mean to have saffron robes. It doesn't mean that you live in the forest in a hermitage. Real renunciation means you have no attachment to any materialistic, personal, selfish gain. And that's real renunciation. And so Krishna says, S, stay in the world, but T, Tyaga, live in a spirit of renunciation, but not just external renunciation, internal renunciation. And E stands for equal vision. Because what Krishna then explains in the next part of this chapter is that as you're living and functioning in this world and interacting with different living entities, then have an equal vision. Understand that whether it's a cow, an elephant, a dog, or anyone, any entity has a soul within it. The body is animated by the soul. And so there may be many different types of body, but have an equal vision. Learn to see the equality of all beings and live in a spirit of non-violence. And P stands for peace. When you see that there's a soul and a super soul within everything and people act in that spiritual consciousness, then that is what will really bring about peace in the world. So this is basically some of the main points of chapter 5. The acronym is STEP. S stands for stay in the world. But T stands for Tyag, renounce. But don't just renounce externally, renounce internally. E, equal vision. While you're moving in this world, acting in that spirit of renunciation, realize that there is a soul within everything. And P, when you realize that there's the soul and the super soul within everything, can you act in that consciousness that will bring about peace in the world? And that will bring about peace in your own life. Very nice, Krishna explains. And then chapter number 6, after Krishna has spoken to Arjuna so much about living in the world and continuing to practice spiritual life, what Krishna then does in chapter 6 is he says, well, Arjuna, if you don't want to live in the world, and if you don't want to carry on your duty, and if you don't want to fight in the war, and if you don't want to live with your family, and if you want to instead go to the forest and be a renunciate, then you will have to practice dhyana yoga. This is the alternative. So what Krishna basically explains in chapter 6 is that the alternative to karma yoga is dhyana yoga. And dhyana yoga is not easy. And therefore the acronym for 6 is easy, because what Krishna explains in chapter number 6 is not easy. E stands for enemy or friend. Our basic, most formidable enemy in the world is not Donald Trump, is not the American government, is not the Illuminati, is not the media, it's not even COVID. The biggest enemy in our life is our own mind. Because the mind can make heaven out of hell, and more often it makes hell out of heaven. The mind is so powerful. So Krishna says, look, Arjun, if you want to be spiritual, you got to learn to make your mind, turn it from being an enemy and transform it into being a friend. E stands for enemy. A stands for Ashtanga Yoga. So Arjun's like, yeah, I'm on board. I know what the mind is like. It's very difficult to control. So tell me, Krishna, how shall I control it? So Krishna says, I'm telling you, do it through Karma Yoga. But if you don't want to do it through Karma Yoga, then A, do it through Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga means the yoga of eight limbs. You know the yoga of eight limbs? If you go to India today and you go to very remote places, you will see yogis doing the Ashtanga Yoga. If you go to Kumbh Mela, I don't know if anyone's ever been Kumbh Mela. I went 10 years ago. You'll see many Ashtanga yogis. And you know what they do? They sit in the lotus position with their back, neck and head erect in a straight line. They focus their minds. They don't close their eyes, but they don't keep their eyes open. They keep their eyes half open and stare on the tip of their nose. You can try it now if you want. It will look a little funny. And what they do is they meditate on Krishna within themselves. And that's all they do all day. They sit there just meditating. And of course, there are many other complexities. So Arjun's looking at this and he's thinking, my God, I thought Karma Yoga was difficult. Ashtanga Yoga looks even more difficult. And so Krishna, so he's like, I'm not sure. Can I even do this? And then the next part of the chapter, S, success or failure. Because then that prompts Arjun to think, you know what? This spiritual path is not easy. What happens if I begin it, but I'm not successful? These processes don't sound very easy. So Krishna then says, don't worry. Whatever progress you make on the path, it's never lost. So S stands for success. It's always a success. And then finally, Krishna at the end of the chapter, Y stands for yogi. So Krishna looks at Arjun and says, look, Arjun, you're not going to be an Ashtanga yogi. You're not going to be able to go to the forest and meditate on the super soul within, sitting on a deer skin, sitting there with your half open eyes on the tip of, forget it, Arjun. You're not going to do it. You're not going to make it. Krishna says, but Arjun, you have to be a yogi. And let me tell you, Arjun, who is the highest type of yogi? Yoginam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmana. Shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamo mataha. Krishna says, yoginam api sarvesham, of all the yogis in creation that you can conceive of, karma yogis, jnana yogis, ashtanga yogis, hatha yogis, hot yoga, cold yoga, whatever other types of yoga you have in the world today. The highest type of yogi is the bhakti yogi. So Krishna says to Arjun, continue connecting all your work to me and develop devotion. And this is how the sixth chapter ends. And then it goes into the chapters on bhakti. So the acronym for chapter number six was easy, because Krishna outlines that the alternative to karma yoga is not easy. E stands for enemy or friend, because the mind is the most formidable enemy. Krishna says you have to control it. Arjun says how? Krishna says A, through Ashtanga yoga. Arjun says, I don't know, it's going to be difficult. S, will I be successful? What if I'm not successful? Krishna says, don't worry. Whatever progress you make is fine. But then Krishna ends the chapter saying, why yogi become the highest yogi, which is the bhakti yogi. And this is my little summary of chapter number 5 and 6, according to the purports of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. And yeah, is that okay, Rajiv?
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank
okay, can I do one thing at this point? I'm in an office right now and it's 8:30 and we're living in the temple, and you'd be surprised, but people go to sleep at 8:30 in this building. And so I'm right next to a room where devotees are going to go to sleep. So what, or actually devotees don't go to sleep. Devotees rest. I realized this when I came to the Hare Krishna movement. There's like, there's certain words you have to use, and like devotees don't sleep, they rest. Anyway, so these devotees are going to rest. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to log off for like 2 minutes, 1 minute. I'm just going to go to another room and then we can continue with Q&A. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So thank you. I just tried to share something with, can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. I just tried to share something with you. That's the fifth and sixth chapters. Of course, there's so much more as we go into Srila Prabhupada's purports and learn more, but I just tried to give you maybe some highlights, and I'm happy to take some questions from all of you. I see many people I know here, very good friends. So yeah, maybe we can have like a nice discussion. So yeah, please go ahead.
So thank you, Sthapa. So I asked everyone to send in some questions beforehand. So I'll start. There's quite a few questions, so, and they're quite good as well. Okay, so the first question we have, it's from Rina. And she asks, if you had to summarize the main teachings of the Bhagavad Gita in a couple of sentences or lines, could you please do that? And what differentiates the Bhagavad Gita from other Hindu scriptures? And does it really have all the answers?
Thank you so much. Yeah, very nice question. How would I summarize the Gita in a line? I think the line that I used at the beginning of this session, live, love and leave. That for me summarizes the Gita. It's about how to live in this world, how to navigate all the complexities, all the difficulties, all the different obstacles that we encounter in life. But more than that, it's about how to learn to love, how to learn to love Krishna, how to learn to love everyone else around us, how to learn to love ourselves, how to learn to love life. And then ultimately, we have to leave. Time and tide waiting for no man, as they say in a Christian proverb. It doesn't matter whether you're the pawn, the king or the queen on the chessboard. At the end of the chess game, everyone ends up in the box. That's the reality. So the Gita talks about how to leave this world with grace, how to leave this world in spiritual consciousness, how to leave this mortal realm on a spiritual high, and in that way enter into the transcendent realm, which is our true home. So yeah, next time someone asks you what is the Gita about, tell them it's about how to live, how to love, and how to leave. And in this way, experience a wonderful, perfect life. And your second question, does the Gita contain everything? Yes, the Gita contains everything. In the introduction to the Gita, you'll find a beautiful verse. It's spoken by Lord Shiva. In a beautiful verse, he says, Sarvapa nishado gavo dogda go palanandana vatsa satsa sudir bhokta dugdam gitam ritam mahat. He's giving a metaphor. Imagine in front of you there's a cow. He says, you compare the cow to all of the Vedic scriptures, all of the many, many scriptures. Then there's a milker of the cow. And who's the milker of the cow? Krishna. So Krishna takes all of the scriptures and then he starts milking them. And there's a calf which comes along. When the calf sees the cow giving milk, then the calf is very eager. I want to get some of that milk. So who is the calf that comes along? Arjuna. And then as the milk is coming out, then what is the milk? Dugdham Gitam Ritam Mahat. The milk that comes out is the Bhagavad Gita. So why does a cow exist? Ultimately to give milk. And so Krishna is like the milker who takes all the Vedic scriptures and then milks it and brings out the essence, which is the Gita. And therefore, everything is there in the Gita. Prabhupada once said to a devotee, just read this one book and you will become perfect. So that's the opportunity. So yeah, definitely, everything is there in the Gita. And as you read it, you'll see that it just gets deeper and deeper and deeper. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you so much. Amazing. So the next question we have is from Mani, and she's asked, so in the book, it says Dhritarashtra is spiritually blind. Therefore, the teachings can only be fully understood by devotees such as Arjuna. Then are we also being shown that even though Dhritarashtra and Arjuna were effectively being told or hearing the same thing, Arjuna from Krishna and Dhritarashtra indirectly from Sanjay, their understanding of the teachings from the Gita will be completely different, therefore highlighting the point only true devotees have full understanding?
Yeah, two people can hear the same thing, but according to their state of consciousness, they receive it differently. Isn't it? Two people can see the same thing, and according to their state of consciousness, they can see something completely different. Once there was a couple and they were watching, and there was another couple, and the other couple were walking up to a car, and the man, the husband, he went round to the passenger side of the car, he opened the door, and then the lady walked in, and then he closed the door. So this other couple was looking at the scene. So the wife looked at the husband and said, just see, the marriage is new. And the husband looked back at the wife and said, no, the car is new. So it was quite an interesting point. You know, they were seeing the same thing, but their conclusion was very, very different depending on their consciousness. So they say, we don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we are. And you could also say, we don't hear things as it is. We hear things as we are. And therefore, many people heard the Gita, but they didn't come to the same conclusion as Arjun. For Arjun, it took 45 minutes. I think we've been in classes which have lasted longer than 45 minutes on the Gita, but we didn't come to the conclusion of Arjun yet, because we are not Arjun. So yes, the effect that the Bhagavad Gita has on you depends on your own state of consciousness. If you are open, if you are humble, if you are desperate to receive the knowledge, then the knowledge will have a different impact on you. And therefore, because Arjun had that desperation, because Arjun had that humility, and because Arjun had that openness, 45 minutes, boom, it was finished. We're still waiting for that Arjun moment. We're still trying to find the inner Arjun, you know, isn't it? Like Will Smith, he said, I'm 90% through the Bhagavad Gita, I'm finding my inner Arjun. You know, Will Smith, the famous actor. So yeah, you got to find that inner Arjun. We're not so desperate, isn't it? We're not so desperate in life. We're kind of thinking like, yeah, it's okay. Life's good, you know. I've got my house, I've got my family, I've got my job. I'm doing A-okay. Yeah, there's a few problems, but yeah, life's always full of problems. We're kind of coasting it, you know? It's like, yeah, we don't feel so uncomfortable. And because we don't feel that desperation, the Gita doesn't hit us in the same way. But Arjun was... He was asking, he was questioning, he was searching. And therefore, when Krishna spoke it, boom, it went straight to his heart. So, we want to have that kind of experience, but then we have to become open. So you have to open your heart to receive the message of the Gita. Dhritarashtra's heart was not open, but Arjuna's heart was open.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Very amazing realization. So you actually answered my next question. Why did it take only 45 minutes for Arjuna to understand the Gita? That's very perfectly in sync. The next question we have is from Niels. He asks, I've always been taught that sage Vyas narrated the Mahabharata and Bhagavad Gita to Ganesh, but the line in As It is different. So my question is where is the original book?
No, so it was spoken. Sanjaya was relating the events to Dhritarashtra, who was in the palace. So Sanjaya had divine vision. He had Divya Chakshush. So he was relating the events that were happening to Dhritarashtra. So this was all going on. This is a historical incident. Later on, what happened is that Vyasa compiled the Mahabharata. Okay? And the Mahabharata was basically the history of everything that had happened. And as he was narrating it, Ganesh was scribing it. And then what happened in the apex of the Mahabharata, in the Bhishma Parva, then it comes to the climax. Oh, it's Kurukshetra, and there's Arjuna, and there's Krishna. And then, Senayor Ubayor Madhye. Arjuna says, take my chariot to the middle. And then in the Mahabharata, the conversation of the Gita takes place. So the original text of the Gita is found in the Mahabharata. That's why it was written by Vyas, because Vyas wrote the Mahabharata. So there's no controversy on this. The point is, Dhritarashtra was being related the Bhagavad Gita by Sanjaya because he had divine vision. That's fine. But the whole thing was documented as part of the Mahabharata, which was documented by Ganesh, spoken by Vyas.
Thank you so much, Prasthapaprabhu. The next question we have, and I'll link two questions together. So they asked if men reading the Gita relate to messages from Krishna and to Arjuna or the Pandavas, etc., how can ladies learning the Gita relate to the teachings? What is the message for them? And I guess I'll link another question is, did Kunti know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead?
We are men or women in a certain chapter of existence. Those who are men now, maybe they were women in their previous lives. And those who are women now, maybe they were men in their previous lives. As Shakespeare says, all the world's a stage and all of us simply actors. We have our entrances and exits at different points in the drama. So ultimately, the Bhagavad Gita speaks to the soul. The Bhagavad Gita doesn't speak to a gender. The Bhagavad Gita doesn't speak to a race. The Bhagavad Gita doesn't speak to a nationality. The Bhagavad Gita speaks to the soul. So it's not that Krishna is one man having a conversation with Arjuna, another man. Is Krishna, the Supreme Soul, having a conversation with Arjuna, an infinitesimal soul? And it's the conversation of the Supreme Soul with the infinitesimal soul. And therefore, you are Arjuna. This is the amazing thing. When you read the Gita, don't think that you're reading a conversation between two people. You're reading a conversation between God and you, because you are Arjuna. This is the point Prabhupada is making. So The Gita is for everyone. It's not for a man. It's not spoken to a man. It's spoken to a spirit soul. And that's the essential point.
And the second question was...
Oh, and Kunti. Kunti knew. Kunti was a great devotee. When Kunti was in trouble, then she would approach Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Mahayogin. Oh, Krishna, the supreme mystic, please protect us. Kunti was a great devotee. She knew Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead. Even though she had experienced so many difficulties in her life, she had every reason to lose her faith in God. Right? What are the most traumatic things that happen in someone's life? People around them die. That's traumatic. People around them cause violence towards them. That's traumatic. They are subject to so much injustice. That's traumatic. They experience extreme misfortune and loss in their life. That's traumatic. These are like the five most traumatic things someone could go in through in their life. And then if you look at Kunti's life, she had all of these to the most acute degree. Yet she never lost her faith in Krishna. And shall I tell you the amazing thing? Not only did she never lose her faith in Krishna, you know what she says in the Bhagavatam? Vipada shandu taha shashvat. Tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato darshanam yachyat apunar bhavadarshanam. This is one of those ones they say, don't try this at home. Yeah, you want to know the prayer of Kunti after she went through the most traumatic life imaginable? You know what she said to Krishna? Krishna, vipada shantu taha shashvat, send more. Bring it on. Send more. Why? Because Krishna, when you send me difficulty, then it brings out a reliance and a dependence and a sense of deep connection with you that helps us to stay completely conscious of you at all times. Krishna, don't make my life comfortable. Don't make my life easy. Don't make my life plain sailing, because in all of that comfort, you may just forget. So we are kind of the opposite. We're praying like, Krishna, make it comfortable, make it easy. You know, solve all my problems. You know, Krishna, I want a house by the sea, a color TV, a 50 million gigabyte MP3, Jaya Jagadish Hare. We are praying in a different direction. It's interesting. But Kunti, she had so much devotion. She was like, Krishna is behind everything and Krishna will always protect me. So yeah, not only was Kunti a devotee, she was the most amazing devotee. And therefore we read about her life. And we pray that one day we can have even a drop of that devotion. How can we imagine what that devotion is? It's incredible.
Thank you, Safavu. Very amazing realization. So the next question we have is from Ashwin and also Alka. So they say Vipassana, which is like, I think the meditation where you meditate for like 8 hours.
Buddhist meditation, yeah.
Yeah. They say that's better than learning the Gita and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. And also, like, if God is around, or if God is all around us, why do we have to visit the temple? Why can't we just sit in the room and pray?
Okay, yeah, no, thank you. You see, when you say something is better than something else, the first question we have to ask is, what are you looking for? You know what I'm saying? It's like, what are you looking for? I could say going to a football match is better than reading the Bhagavad Gita, because, you know, I get some instant buzz or something, whatever it may be. If my goal is to have an instant buzz, then going to a football match is better than reading the Gita. So the first question you have to ask is, what is your goal? What is your purpose? What are you ultimately trying to achieve? And therefore, the Gita says, the thing that everyone is ultimately trying to achieve is that everyone wants to love and everyone wants to be loved. Okay, finished. This is the goal of life. The soul wants to give love and experience love. This is the highest experience that every single person is looking for. We're not just looking for peace. We're not just even looking for happiness. We are looking for unalloyed, pure, intense, loving interaction. This is what satisfies the heart's yearning to the greatest extent. And therefore, whether it's Vipassana or whether it's Hatha Yoga or whether it's other spiritual paths, they all give benefit, no doubt. No doubt. But if you want to experience love, if you want to experience connection, heart to heart, soul to soul with the Supreme Person, the most enchanting personality in the entire creation, then that's what the Bhagavad Gita is offering to you. And therefore we say the Bhagavad Gita is the highest, because the Bhagavad Gita can take you right into the inner circle of God's most confidential devotees. That's pretty amazing. So this is what I would say. Vipassana is can give you benefit, of course. Otherwise, why are people doing it? Of course it does. However, the Bhagavad Gita can give you love. That is ultimately incomparable. Okay, and what's the second question?
Second question is, why do we have to go to the temple to pray? Why can't we sit in our room and...
God is everywhere. Why do we have to go to the temple? You can't come to the temple now anyway, in lockdowns. You have no choice. Okay, here, let me give you an analogy. Did you know that water is everywhere? Did you know that here, right here, in the ether, in the air here, there is water? That's why sometimes when many people are in a room, then you'll get condensation. Did you notice? There's water even within the air. So if someone comes to you and says, I'm thirsty, and you look back at them and you say, don't worry, my friend, there's water everywhere. Just open your mouth. No, I still feel thirsty. What's the problem, my friend? There's water everywhere. Just open your mouth. Yes, my friend, there is water everywhere, but when you go to a tap and you take a cup and you drink from that source, the water is accessible in a form that you can directly interact with it. So the point is, God is everywhere. That's a fact. But right now, in our present state of consciousness, it's very difficult to perceive God everywhere. Therefore, going to a temple is means to go to a concentrated place where you can access God in a much more tangible way because of a certain energy that's created there. And when you then get that inspiration, then you can go home and then you can actually begin seeing God everywhere. So yes, God is everywhere. And then the other thing I would say to such a person is, if God is everywhere, then God is in the temple as well. if God is everywhere, then what's the problem going to the temple? Then go, because he's at the temple as well. Temple comes under the umbrella of being everywhere. So we go to a temple for inspiration. We go to a temple to associate with other spiritual people. We go to a temple to learn. And all the gifts that we receive at a temple then empower us to then see Krishna everywhere and be with Krishna. And that's the ultimate point. Yes. Krishna says in the Gita, Yo mam pasyati sarvatra sarvam cha mai pasyati tasyaham na pranashyami sachame na pranashyati. Krishna says, for one who sees me everywhere and sees me in everything, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So the goal is to see Krishna everywhere, but the temple helps you to get to that point.
Thank you, Staffel. And also, can I just add, the food at the temple is so amazing as well.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, how can you not come to the temple like when there's such amazing prasadam? Excellent. And the cows.
Definitely. And you're there, Satapapu, so.
That you have to tolerate, but, you know, everything else is great.
Okay, so the next question is, how do we control the mind?
Well, Arjuna asked Krishna the same question. Chanchalam hi mana Krishna pramathi balavadridam tashyaham nigraham manye vayuri vasudushkaram. Arjuna looks at Krishna and he says, my mind is unsteady, is flickering, is stubborn. Krishna, to control the mind, vayuri vasudushkaram, is more difficult than to control the wind. How do I do it? Arjuna says. What does Krishna say? Asamsayam mahabaho manodurni graham chalam. Abhyasena tukonteya vairagyena chagriyate. Krishna looks at Arjuna and he says, I know it's difficult to control the mind. However, two things, abhyas and vairagya. These are the two things you have to do to control the mind. First thing, vairagya. Detach yourself from the mind. Don't entertain the thoughts in the mind. Don't take your mind too seriously. Learn to neglect your mind. Because half the time, the things that the mind comes up with is simply junk. So don't take your own mind too seriously. Mind your mind. And then the second thing Krishna says is abhyas, practice. Means you have to chant, you have to study the wisdom, you have to discipline your mind in a spiritual way, and then gradually the mind comes more and more under control. Therefore, we do japa. Japa means mantra. What does mantra mean? Mana means mind. And tra means trayate, to free. So mantra literally means that spiritual practice which frees the mind. So if you want to control your mind, this is what you have to do. Number one, neglect the mind. Don't take it too seriously. And number two, mold, discipline the mind. And gradually the mind will come under control. So to overcome the mind is not an overnight journey. It takes a long time. Yeah. You want to know what the mind is like? Niti Shastra explains what the mind is like. Markatasya surapanam tatra vrishchika damsanam tanmadye bhuta samcharo yadva tadva bhavishyati. Okay, you want to know what the mind is like? Markatasya, your mind is like a monkey. Okay? It doesn't stop there. Markatasya surapanam. Your mind is not just a monkey. Your mind is like a drunk monkey. He had a few too many drinks. It doesn't stop there. Tatra vrishchika damsanam. Your mind is like a drunk monkey that's been bitten by a scorpion. He doesn't stop there. Tanmadhye bhuta samcharo. Your mind is like a drunk monkey that's been bitten by a scorpion and then in the middle haunted by a ghost. Yadva tadva bhavishyati. Don't even try to predict what the mind will do next. Who can predict what a drunk monkey bitten by a scorpion and haunted by a ghost, who can predict what such a monkey will do next? We have no idea. The mind is like that. So sometimes, you know, you're going through the day and you think, oh my God, how did this thought come in my mind? Well, the mind, that's the mind is a drunk, but the point is you don't take the mind seriously and you discipline the mind. So Krishna says, abhyasena tu konteya vairagyena chagriyate. Abhyasa and vairagya, this is how you control the mind. But it's not overnight. It takes many, many years. You have to wake up every day. You have to chant. One devotee, he said, when I chant, my mind is like a horror movie. It's like a horror movie when I'm chanting. I said, yeah, this is what to do. It will become a beautiful movie eventually over time.
Thank you so much, Tapu. And I guess this next question. Yeah.
This you just let me know when we're stopping, yeah? Because okay. It's 8:52. So whenever you're ready, I'm fine.
Okay. Yeah, we've got quite a little bit more questions. Everyone's happy to stay on. So the next question is from Simon, which I guess leads on nicely. He says, any suggestions for mantra meditation?
Any suggestions for mantra meditation? Many suggestions. Today I'll give you one suggestion, which at 8:50 at night I'm meditating on, which is early to bed, early to rise, makes one healthy, spiritually wealthy, and more wise. So if you wake up, if somehow you can do your meditation in the early morning, before the world is moving, before the messages are coming in on WhatsApp, before the news roll is coming out, before all the problems start surfacing, before things start going wrong, you need to do it in the morning. It makes a big difference. How early? When I tell people you need to do it in the morning, the first thing they look at me is, how early? How early? My answer is, as early as possible. As early as possible. Can you do it? 5 o'clock? 4 o'clock, Prashant, can you do it? 4 o'clock. How about Lee? 3 o'clock. Are you ready? Maybe. He says maybe. Subarna, 2 o'clock. What do you think? Is it possible? Earlier the better. You wake up early in the morning, it's a different experience. Krishna is very much accessible. So with mantra meditation, you see, somehow or other, you have to give your attention. If you give your attention to Krishna, then you will develop attraction for Krishna. And after developing attraction for Krishna, you will become attached to Krishna. Attention leads to attraction, which leads to attachment. But it all begins with attention. If you chant and you're watching TV, if you chant and you're driving. No, it's not going to work. If you chant and you're having, I've seen devotees chant while they're having a conversation with someone. So they say what they want to say, and while the other person is speaking, they're chanting. And then they speak, and then while the other person speaks, they get a few more mantras in. You gotta sit down, close your eyes, don't go to sleep, but close your eyes, and just give your full attention. And it's as simple as that. And the early morning really helps. So I guess, Simon, this is what I wanted to share with you today. There are many other things we could say about chanting. But try to do it in the early morning. Tomorrow morning, you have an opportunity. You have a decision to make when the alarm clock goes off. Let's see what happens.
Thank you, Prabhu. I'm just about struggling to wake up at 7, so definitely I'm taking that advice on board. The next few questions are related to karma. So Rina asks, is killing justified in the Bhagavad Gita? What about our karma? Lord Krishna teaches us to take revenge or fight for our rights, while Lord Buddha tells us to forgive and forget no matter what. So who is right?
They're both right. You see, the Vedic aphorism is Mahimshat Sarva Bhutanam. One should not commit violence towards living entities. Okay? We never commit violence towards living entities. He said, hang on. Krishna told Arjuna to fight in the Kurukshetra. That sounds like violence. Now my question to you will be, if you're walking down the street and someone is being attacked, an innocent person, and you go in there to try and save that person, which requires some level of aggression on your part, are you being violent or are you being non-violent? Sometimes in certain situations, being violent actually comes under the banner of being non-violent. Is a knife good or bad? It depends who's using it. If a knife is used by someone in a very deranged state of mind, the knife will be used to kill someone. But if the knife is used in the hand of a surgeon who is guided by knowledge, that knife will save someone. Is a knife good or bad? Should a knife ever be used? It should be used by the right person for the right reason. So violence, as a principle, is generally something we avoid. However, in certain situations, being violent is actually an act of non-violence. And therefore, Arjuna was encouraged by Krishna, be violent, be aggressive, because the higher principle is that by this violence and aggression, you will actually be actually being non-violent, because you'll be actually creating more peace and harmony and more stability in the world. So we should not look at things on face value. We should understand what is the deeper driving factor and motivation behind it. Yeah.
Thank you. So the next question is, Krishna believes that one cannot gain wisdom by avoiding action, since every creature is driven by action. Please can you explain the actions to get wisdom?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, you cannot stop acting in this world. Everyone is acting. You can't do nothing. Yeah, you have to do something. So the idea is karma yoga. Act, but act with a spiritual goal in mind. All of you on this call are working, but you should be working not just like anyone else working in this world. You're working, but your work is connected to a higher spiritual cause. All of you on this call have a family and you're looking after your family, but you're not just looking after your family in a normal way like everyone else. You're looking after them, but with a higher spiritual objective in mind. All of you, you know, you're doing so many things in the world, but you connect it to a higher spiritual cause. And by that connection, you're free from reaction and you become spiritually wise and spiritually realized. So I don't know if you ever remember in the olden days, they used to have like tapes. If you're that old that you remember cassette tapes, then realize the clock is ticking. I mean, that was like back in the day, you may remember cassette tapes, yeah? So did you notice on cassette tapes, there were two spools? Remember? If you remember. Did you notice they were both going in the same direction? Yeah, that was going that way. And that was going that way. Did you notice they were going in the same direction, but one of them was getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and another one was getting bigger and bigger and bigger? One person is acting in this world, and another person is acting in this world, and externally it looks like they're doing exactly the same thing. But one person is getting more and more karma and another person is freeing themselves from all karma. Not because they're doing a different act. The act is the same. But because they have a different motivation, a different mentality, and a different mindset. So this is what the Gita is giving you. It's equipping you with spiritual motivation, spiritual mindset, and spiritual mentality. And this is what makes your life perfect. And then you can do anything in this world. You can work, you can do anything, and you'll be completely untouched.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'll go to the next question. It's from Mani again. So in yoga, I have always been taught that there are four main paths to yoga: karma, bhakti, jnana, and raja, eight limb path to asana yoga. Each path suits a different temperament or approach to life, and all paths ultimately lead to the same destination, union with Brahman or God. However, I've always been taught to gain true wisdom, all paths should follow or integrate into our lives. To me, this means that all the paths work together. For example, before practicing jnana yoga, an aspirant need to have integrated the lessons of the other yogic paths. For without selflessness, karma, and love of God, bhakti, strength of the body, mind, the search of self-realization can be mere idle speculation. But reading the Gita summary throughout the Gita so far, it seems to tell us that chanting bhakti is the most important and others are not so important. But wouldn't this make us a little imbalanced for a quest for self-realization? Shouldn't all paths be followed equally?
Wonderful question. I mean, now we have to do a whole session on the yoga ladder, you know, to explain how all of these yoga ladders work together. It's a beautiful question. Okay, so I just give a few things, and then maybe on another time we do a whole session on all the yogas and how they work together. So let me say a few things in response to what has been raised. Number one, every yoga path connects you to God. No doubt, yoga means union. So whether you do karma yoga, jnana yoga, raja yoga, bhakti yoga, you achieve connection, no doubt. However, every yoga gives you a different level of intimacy in your connection. Yeah, karma yoga takes you closer to God, but only so far. Raja Yoga takes you closer to God, but only so far. Jnana Yoga also, but only so far. Bhakti is the culmination of all yoga paths. Some people will practice other yoga paths and then take up bhakti to reach the culmination. And other people will just take up bhakti straight away and just reach the culmination. Bhakti is the culmination of everything, but it doesn't require anyone to do any prior things before it to take up bhakti. That's why bhakti is so special. And so, while your point is true, that every yoga path is there for a different type of person, and every yoga path connects you to God, the still ultimate point that we have to realize that Krishna is making in the Gita is that bhakti is the culmination of all of these paths, and that bhakti is not dependent on practice on the, of any of these paths in order to be adopted.
Thank you, Stafu. So next question I've got here is, does bhakti affect our karma? And is it possible to wipe the slate clean with our karma in this life?
Yeah, so as why does first, before I answer this, why does karma even exist? Karma exists to educate us, isn't it? Why do you get karma? Because Krishna wants to teach you a better way to live. So now my question to you is, if you've learned the best way to live, to teach us a lesson. If you've learned the best way to live, if you've learned all the lessons because you've taken up bhakti, if you have nothing more to learn in this world because you've completely embraced your spirituality, do you need to be taught? No. Do you need any karma? No. And therefore, either when you take up bhakti, one of two things will happen. Either Krishna will completely remove your karma, or he'll give you an inner strength and inner immunity so that when karmic consequences come, they won't affect you. And in this way, a devotee ultimately who surrenders to Krishna, ultimately, they're no longer affected by karma. Therefore, Krishna says at the end of the Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarva, sarva dharman parityaja mamekam saranam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami ma sucha. If you surrender unto me, aham sarvasya, sarva dharman paritya mamekam saranam vaja aham tvam sarva papebhyo. I take away all of your sinful reactions. Masucha, don't worry. So yeah, it's the ultimate karmic equalizer. Yeah. Surrender to Krishna. Finish. Everything gone. Easier said than done.
I like that karmic equalizer.
Karmic equalizer, yeah.
So last few questions. So this one's about guru. So Vijay's asked, without the direction of a guru, how does one know they are following the right path?
No, you don't. That's why you need guru. Therefore, what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshina. Go to a guru, pranipat, be humble. Don't go in front of a guru and be proud. Be humble. Pariprashna. Don't go in front of a guru and start giving a guru advice. Ask questions. And sevaya. Don't go to a guru and say, can you give me this? Can you give me this? Can you give me? Go to a guru and say, what can I do for you? What can I do for you? You need a guru. You need a guru in anything in life. Therefore, you need a guru in spiritual life. But there are different types of gurus. There is Shishya, who is like friends around you, or those who are a little further on the path who can help you. There is Diksha Guru, someone who is very spiritually evolved, who can give you initiation. So there are many types of gurus. So you need a guru. Everything, for anything, you require a guru. So take help. There are so many gurus available. There are many gurus, even on this call. There are many people you can learn from. Take their help. No problem. How do you find the guru? I just saw that come up. Seek and thee shall find. Krishna says, Ishvara sarva bhutanam riddhesha arjuna tisthati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra rudhani mayaya. Krishna says, I'm in the heart. I'm directing the wanderings of all living entities. Krishna is in your heart. And when Krishna sees that you want to come to him, when Krishna sees that you're spiritually enthusiastic and desirous to perfect your life, when Krishna sees that you have an eagerness to find a guru, Brahmayan sarva bhutani yatra, he's in your heart, he'll guide you, he'll take you to that person. And you will know by hearing from different personalities, you will come across a person who, when you hear them speak, you will realize this person, Krishna communicates to me through this person. And then you will want to surrender to that person as guru. So pray that you will find a guru. Hear from many different spiritual personalities, and then ultimately wait for that time when Krishna will make it very clear to you. And you won't need anyone to tell you. You will know. When you've eaten a good meal, you don't need anyone to tell you that you're satisfied. You know, finish, I'm done. In your heart, you know. So you will know, no problem.
So the next question, sorry, this one leads on nicely. So Roshni asks, how did Sutapa know his guru was the one for him?
Same process. Hearing from many gurus, hearing from many spiritual teachers. Ultimately, you encounter someone who touches your heart, who you can very clearly tell is communicating things to you, which is from Krishna. I don't know how to explain it to you. It's very personal, like you will experience it. And someone who, when you see them, hear them, and you are in their presence, life becomes very, very clear, and you know what you need to do with your life. So you will encounter someone like that in your journey. And it may take time. It's not what some people find the guru automatically. I became a monk when I was 21 after university, and I was living in the monastery for 8 years until I got initiated. It took me that much time. So it may take you the same amount of time. It may take you longer. It may take you less. Everyone's on their own journey. When the time is right and when you are in the right state of mind, all the arrangements will be made.
Thank you. We have two more questions left. I don't know if you're happy to take them or...
Oh, for me, no problem. As long as everyone's going to wake up in the morning for their japa.
Definitely try. So Kirti's asked a nice question, which is, in one of your biographies online, you mentioned that you had adopted full-time monastic life for future knowledge. Can you suggest any place of worship or learning experience event that you attended in India?
So when I graduated from university when I was 21, and I wanted to explore spiritual life. So what better place to go than India? So I went to India when I was 21, And in India, there are many, many beautiful places. There is Vrindavan, the place of Krishna. There is Mayapur, the place of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in many other places in India, we have beautiful ashrams and temples and communities where you can learn. India is a special place because the culture of spiritual life is still very much alive there. And therefore, we go to these places for inspiration. Usually, like now I'm reminiscing, is 28th of January. So usually in January, every year, I go to India for 1 month. And there are no Zoom calls, there are no telephone calls, there is no emails, just for 1 month, learning about Krishna, chanting, complete spiritual immersion. And it's very, very powerful. It's a very, very powerful experience. So in all of your life, once we're out of the COVID era, please take some time to go to these spiritual places in India. Vrindavan is the place where Krishna was 5,000 years ago. And shall I tell you a secret? Vrindavanam paritya ja padamekam na gacchati. Krishna never takes one step outside of Vrindavan. So you could go to Vrindavan and you may, maybe, just maybe, you may bump into Krishna. And if you don't bump into Krishna, I'll guarantee you, you'll bump into many, many spiritual people who will help you to see Krishna. So yeah, take the time to go to India. Take the time to go to holy places and take the time away from your normal life. You see, sometimes you have to go away from London. Sometimes you have to go away from all your uncles and aunties and colleagues. And you need a break also, you know. You need a break from all these things sometimes as well. And you need to just go to a different place. And you need to ask yourself, why am I here? What is the purpose of my life? And at the end of the life, what do I want to have achieved? And am I doing that? So these are the questions we need to ask ourselves, because time is ticking. Time is ticking. Time is catching up. And we want to make sure that we fulfill our deepest purpose in life before time runs out. And so please regularly take time out to make sure that you're going on that journey to spiritual perfection. Did I bump into Krishna? Yes, well, that's another discussion that we'll have another time. But yes, Krishna is there. Krishna is in Vrindavan. And yeah, Vrindavan is our home with Krishna.
So, can we come with you to Vrindavan next time you go?
Oh, yes, let's all go. I can't wait. I would love to go with all of you. That would be my honor. Thank you so much for allowing me to. I saw that Lee posted a question twice, and Lee's my old friend, you know, like he was staying with us here in the monastery. And he asked me, what's my favorite chapter of the Gita? I think my favorite chapter of the Gita is chapter number 12, because in that chapter, Krishna explains all of the qualities that make one dear to him. Krishna says, if you're non-envious, Krishna says, if you're kind, Krishna says, if you never put anyone else into any trouble, Krishna says, if you're always working for the welfare of all living beings, then... And he gives a whole list of qualities that endear one to him. And so I regularly read chapter 12 of the Gita, and I remember this is my goal in life. I have to become this type of person. I have to become free of envy. I have to become free of anger. I have to become free of greed. And I have to become someone that Krishna will look at and smile. So that's what I'm trying to do in my life. And the chapter 12 really helps me. And it's the shortest chapter of the Gita as well. So you can read it like that every single day. It's only 20 verses, but beautiful verses. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share something with you. I love having your association. And Rajiv is one of my inspirations as well, working for the welfare of all living beings in Food for Life and so many things. And so many of you I appreciate. So give me your blessings that I can develop some of your qualities and your sincerity. And I hope we can be together again soon, studying Bhagavad Gita again. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you so much, Sitapa Prabhu. That is an amazing session. I'm going to be an opportunist and say, can you then come and present chapter 12?
Sure. That would be nice. Yeah.
No, thank you so much for taking your time out. And we're really, really grateful. And I'm so grateful that I learned Gita from you this year. And I can share a little bit with everyone, whatever small knowledge that we are sharing with everyone. So, we look forward to seeing you again and sharing your unlimited wisdom. And thank you for your association.
Yeah, today. We're praying when everyone can come back to the temple soon. It's like, it's not the same without all of you. So let's pray you can all come back soon. Hare Krishna. All the best.
You can all unmute yourselves and thank Sutapa if you like before you go off.